Viveciva kamehi, viveca kusali dhammehi, separated aloof from centrality, separated aloof from unwholesome phenomena. Piti sukhang patamang janam pasampacha viharati. Someone dwells in the first jhana accompanied by rapture and bliss. So this is often comes incredibly often, and it's important for that reason. One issue is because often these repetitions are abbreviated, and then we start losing awareness, mindfulness, and how important they are. And the jhanas are mentioned very, very regularly, very frequently. And that is typical formula. And that already indicates how to get there. So you have to be, first of all, completely beyond sensuality. So if you feel you are in some ecstatic, mystical state when you are drugged out and dancing away on the wave, it wouldn't qualify, because it is obviously connected with sensuality. Or if someone may be in war, people can get into this quite amazing mind state sometimes, where they are super sharp, super alert. They may not even notice any pain. They're heavily injured and continue fighting and don't even notice it. Again, there cannot possibly be jhana in the Buddhist sense, or anywhere close to that. Because in war, when you run around killing people, it's obviously an unwholesome phenomenon. And then piti sukha, that is rapture and bliss. So the crucial ingredient for the first full state of samadhi, in the first jhana, it will be rapture and bliss. The other explanation the Buddha usually gives is the suppression of the five hindrances. The five mental hindrances is what stop the mind from attaining samadhi. In fact, the default state of the mind is actually samadhi. In a sense, you don't have to do anything for your mind to rest in samadhi. The problem is that we are all continuously, actively pushing the mind out. It's just like a body of water. The natural state of a body of water is to be completely still. Of course, mostly when you see water, it will not be completely still, because there may be wind, there may be rain, there may be frogs or ducks swimming there, or someone throwing stones. And that creates ripples. But still, the default position of a body of water, if there are no disturbances, it would be completely still. Fascinatingly, it's the same with our mind. So what you have to do, so to speak, to attain samadhi is only to stop disturbing and pushing the mind outside. Of course, that's not so easy, and we're so used to it. Yeah. And the Buddha explains that via the five hindrances: sensual desire, ill will, aversion, sloth and torpor is a typical translation. You could also say laziness and sleepiness, slacking off. Number four, restlessness and remorse. And number five, doubt. And the way, the practical way of developing samadhi is actually gradually weakening these five. Not just when you're in formal meditation and you're hoping now to attain samadhi, but throughout your life, basically. And when the mind experiences freedom from these five, it will actually experience gladness, and that gladness will develop into rapture and bliss. There's very beautiful similes, like Samanya Pala Sutta, it's the second one in the long discourses, where the Buddha gives all the similes. And sensuality, it's like debt. You're in debt. Because to enjoy sensuality, you need to be healthy, you need to have money. And basically you're enjoying your past good karma. If you didn't have good karma, you wouldn't be able to enjoy anything sensually. And if one abandons sensuality, the Buddha said it's similar to a person who has got this huge mortgage, plus his credit card maxed out, plus huge loans. And now you succeed in paying that all back. And you're free from debt. You would feel so happy. Well, the second simile is for ill will, and that is sickness. If you're angry and it's like a sick person with a bad flu. And again, if you ever had a bad flu, you probably remember how happy you are when you recover. So similar, if we can abandon ill will, aversion, we will feel that gladness, that joy, that happiness, like someone recovering from a bad sickness. The slacking off, vegging out, lazy, sleepy. The Buddha compared it to someone being in a dungeon, in this dog dungeon. Like in the movies in the Middle Ages when they would throw you into a dungeon. Cold, dark, mossy, wet, dirty. This is actually the mind when it's sleepy and lazy. Curiously, we can indulge in that, but if you carefully observe it, if you decide to sleep in on the weekend, you sleep in for hours and hours, and one just gets more and more dizzy and less awake. Although it may still be some kind of fun to indulge in that. But compare that if you are really happy, you're on holiday, you had a good night's sleep, you have a good cup of coffee, and now you're starting doing something you really enjoy and you're really bright and alert. It's obviously so much better. So overcoming laziness, sleepiness, is like getting release from the dungeon. Most people cannot imagine what it is actually like to be free from these, because they are always kind of effective. What a normal person would call that they are free from anger or aversion is actually only a low-level anger aversion. And it's very striking. The one I find maybe most striking in the outstanding Kuba Ajahns is a lack of laziness and sleepiness. It's just unbelievable. They're just so active and alert, often sleeping only in a few hours. I remember once Lungpo Plien visiting the monastery in Perth, and I think he was about 70 when he came. And he would talk, it was Sunday, and he would talk in the city center for many hours after the meal with the lay community. And then he would come to the monastery, and then almost straight away the evening drink would start, and he would teach more Dhamma. And by 7 p.m. the official Dhamma talk would start, and he would continue teaching, And by about 11, after 4 hours, the translating monk, Ajahn-Yanadamona, he couldn't do it anymore, was too tired. And then Lungpa Plien would still continue for maybe half an hour until he noticed there's no more translation, there's no point. And then he would call an end, and then he would go back to his kuti. And a couple of monks, the ones who are still feeling most alert, he would go to his kuti for a foot massage and some personal advice. And maybe by 1 o'clock, these monks are too tired. And then they would go away. And then he would go out, and because he'd been sitting so much, he would do half an hour walking meditation. And then he would have, at night time, I think he would often only have 2 hours. And then maybe another 2 hours in the afternoon. And would continue like that every day. And he would teach until the translator fades out. And then the usually quite young monks, you know, they would go to the kuti, different ones usually, the ones who muster the energy. And then they would go away and couldn't take it anymore. They would do some walking meditation. Just very amazing what the mind is like if it's actually really free from laziness and sloth and torpor. Most people can't imagine that. They have actually never experienced it. Basically, you know, the only time you really experience it is you have samadhi. There's a kind of vagueness and alertness, you know, which is just much better, you know, than the best kind of coffee or green tea after a long, good sleep in the holidays is still much better. And similar for freedom from sensuality, freedom from ill will, freedom from restlessness. Restlessness, the Buddha compared to being a slave. Just imagine the ancient Rome on the plantations in Dixie in the 19th century, slave work. And the master is just telling you, just working you like a donkey. Have to do whatever you're told and work all day. Not for your own benefit, only for the benefit of your master. It's not nice, no? But this is no restlessness what we suffer from. And again, most people can't imagine what it's like when the mind is free from restlessness and at the same time free from laziness as well. Usually we vacillate between these two. And when people try to overcome their laziness and lack of alertness, and then they become very active. Or when they're very active and at some stage they get tired. But if you abandon both, that's a very high state, you know, which most people wouldn't experience. Doubt is the lost caravan. You're in a desert, or even alone. You're in a desert and you lost your way. Now you're walking along and you're trying to get out of the desert. And abandoning doubt isn't like being in the desert and then arriving at an oasis and drinking and lying in the pool. Feels very good. Just one of these will feel very good, and if all five. So you're sick in your dungeon, and then you're released, and additionally you're a slave, and you're also released from slavery, and someone pays off all your debt, and you're out of the desert. Hard to imagine now how happy you would be. So that is basically the program. That's the gradual training, again, what is often repeated. And then people lose awareness how important it is. And it's in the long discourses, which are obviously very important because it's a collection of the longest discourses. And from number 2 to, I think, number 13, there's this very, very long repetition in all these dozen suttas about the gradual training. and how someone goes into a empty kuti or sitting under a tree or in the wilderness and abandoning these five hindrances, experiencing gladness. Gladness turns into rapture. When the person is experiencing rapture, then the body will become tranquil, getting a body tranquility. Someone with a completely tranquil body, you can sit for many hours without pain in your knees. Someone with that tranquility will experience bliss, and the blissful mind unifies in samadhi. Yeah, for sure, Advanta tradition did that. That would do that usually. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they have samadhi. You can also just push it. You just sit and walk and try to arouse energy and fight the sleepiness. But of course, if someone has very good samadhi, then they can do it easily. You had one? Until the morning or until midnight? Oh, wow, there. Ajahn Siri seems to be stricter. It used to be only till midnight now. After midnight is voluntary, ne? You didn't know. Ajahn Shah, usually it was all night and everyone was expected. But yeah, because then it's already the morning chanting. And then it's over the night. Yeah, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, you can also write on inspiration. And if you live there and for years, and this is every week, and it's obviously more difficult. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes you can be amazingly alert after staying awake all night. Yeah. Sometimes you can push through and get this strong energy going, but it usually catches you then the next day or something. I mean, people can stay up all night when they party, isn't it? It's quite easy. It's not difficult to stay up all night. It's only a question of what do you put your mind on. And if you're trying to watch your breath for the whole night, it appears impossible to stay awake. Thomas had a question. I wouldn't recommend being equanimous. You see, equanimity in the Buddha's sense is the total opposite of drowsiness. And if you're already drowsy, then there's no equanimity the way the Buddha means it in any case. And you would probably then have some more like a state of indifference, and you can't overcome drowsiness by indifference. Now what you need there is no arousing energy. And not to allow that to seep in, but once you notice it, you just get up. Put on a bright light. Have a cold shower. I haven't seen many people falling asleep under a cold shower. one can fall asleep walking. That is possible if you're really tired. But no, it's much less likely than sitting. Bright light is good. Even imagining bright light, but nowadays we can usually switch on light. Very helpful. But you are quite right, because it's very insidious. It sneaks in, the drowsiness. And it can feel very nice. And it can feel very, very peaceful and calm. And you may think, oh, meditation is progressing. I'm so peaceful. But in reality, you're just falling asleep or nodding once you develop that habit, it can be very difficult to break. Again, an excellent one is happiness. Happiness and tiredness, they just don't go together, it's not possible. Just imagine you win the jackpot in the lotto, and the guy rings on your door and informs you, you won the $50 million jackpot. Could you imagine that you say, oh, this is really fantastic news, but you know I'm actually quite tired. I will first sleep a few hours and then I will attend to that. Is that a realistic scenario? However tired this person may have been, the moment they get told they won the $50 million jackpot, there will be no tiredness. When you're so happy, like winning the jackpot, there will be no tiredness. So a very powerful one, means of overcoming laziness, tiredness, is rapture, happiness, bliss, joy. That's probably how you could do it. I think you were flying high in Thailand, you were just so happy, joyful, happy, most of the time. This is how you can stay awake. Yes. Okay, it's two little bit different mind states. Disappointed means more like you're really sad and a little bit depressed. Angry is more like you're really angry and steaming. You're asking about both. Yeah. The most powerful against anger is loving kindness, metta, to all beings. May all beings be happy and well. May all beings be free from suffering. May all beings live long, healthy, and happily. May they be strong, confident. Now that is the wish for all beings to be happy. That is the best antidote against anger. And it's also helpful not to feel so upset and disappointed. However, to get that going, you may want to use some person where you find it very easy. Can you wish well to a koala? We just got the visiting Thai monk 2 weeks ago, and we got him to Lone Pine Koala Sanctuary for the koala holding. And most people, when they see a koala, it's quite easy to wish them well, isn't it? Or a little puppy, or a little kitten. First thing, you're not the only one, I can guarantee you. We're all struggling with that. It's a bit like a fire. Would you find it difficult to put out the little candle? The candle on the shrine, if I light that? Would you find it difficult to extinguish the candle? Is that difficult? No, I find it usually quite easy. No? Getting a candle, you can extinguish a candle. It's quite easy. You can just blow it out, which we wouldn't do on the shrine, but you can use the candle extinguisher. It's quite easy. However, imagine the candle topples over and it starts burning the carpet. And then the whole shrine and the carpet is burning. Would you find that one easy to extinguish? That's really difficult, no? Once a house is burning. It's the same in your mind. You have to catch the anger when it's so small, just one little candlelight. This is why you need mindfulness. You should already be mindful, okay, in that situation, I may get angry, that you know already beforehand. Or when that person comes, if they say this thing again, then I may get angry. You're even anticipating the fire danger. That is the easiest, that the fire doesn't come up at all. This is why you start, and the best is you start your day with metta meditation. After you wake up, May all beings be happy and well. May I be healthy and happy. May all beings live long, healthy and happily. May I live healthy and happy. May I be free from anger. May I be filled with loving kindness. May all beings be free from anger. May all beings practice loving kindness. Now this is a little bit like hosing. If it's dry and fire danger and you're hosing all around your home, fire can't establish itself if you have a well-hosed garden lawn. It's wet. That is the most powerful. You start in the morning and you already establish the opposite quality, loving kindness. And then the anger will find it very difficult to come up. And then you're mindful and you already check out, if I start talking to this person about politics, we will just both get angry. And then you don't talk to that person about politics, you just talk with that person about the weather and about koalas. Or you know, if you go to that website or watch that movie, and then you will get upset and angry. So then you don't watch that. The sense restraint. You have to check out, if I see that, if I hear that, will it just trigger anger? And then if possible, you avoid that. Of course, we can't always avoid that, but if we can, then we do. And then when the anger comes up, just very little flame, you have to immediately extinguish. That's why you need good mindfulness. If it's a little bit, we may not notice. We have to notice when it's very small and you can overcome. It's also helpful hanging out with people who are very loving and kind, and not to spend too much time with very angry people, like Kalyana Mitta. Come to Dhammagiri, all kind of kind and not so angry people here. If it's more sadness, if you're disappointed and sad, just remember the Buddha. Think about the great qualities and that we have as teaching. Then your heart will be uplifted. But you're surely not the only one. We are all working on that.